Welcome to the show. My guest this week, someone that I've been reading for a long time, really, really funny writer, Pulitzer Prize winner, best-selling author, Dave Barry. Really astute, really insightful, really funny stuff that he's been churning out for, you know, the last 30 years. And he has a new book out about his dog. I read it. Really funny. My wife read it. Our dog read it. Our dog loved it. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. Dave gets into kind of what makes his mind work and how he comes up with his ideas and what the book is about. So enjoy Dave Barry. He's really, really funny. Really great to have you on. I've been a fan of yours for a long, long time, so it's great to talk to you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the book focuses on your dog, Lucy. By the way, for the record, we have a dog, Daisy. We adopted her about a year and a half ago, and she has a weak sphincter. That's all I'm going to say there, because she does. So our house looks like a nursing home because there are like pee pads everywhere because, God forbid, Daisy could hold it in.
Well, that was nice of you to take Daisy in.
Yeah, she's a good dog. So in reading the book, I love the book, and my wife just been going crazy for it. You know, it's you've through your dog and through observing your dog, you've come up with seven life lessons that you think are helpful to you and maybe others. And you had an interesting quote. You said, "I want to believe if my old dog can still have fun, I can too. I don't want to wait until it's too late." Is the impetus to write the book, did you feel like there was just something lacking in you that you wanted to fix or address through the book?
Not like an acute lacking, but you know, I turned 70, and you tend to look back at your life at that age, because you know it's old. There's like no way around it. My editor at Simon & Schuster, Priscilla Payton, suggested that I write a book about dogs. Mm-hmm. And I have written a lot of columns about dogs, and all of them basically said, "Hey, dogs are not that bright." You know, that was the premise, the humor premise of this. Right. And they're not, you know, they're not rocket scientists. But but when I thought about it, like, the two things kind of came together. I'm getting old, and dogs, I got, you know, like, what would I say? Am I going to keep writing that dogs aren't that bright? But when I really thought about it, I realized that Lucy was, you know, she may be not that bright, but she's doing better at aging than I am. She's more joy in her life still.
Right.
And that was the idea. I mean, it was a simple enough idea. And I want to stress that it's not like I discovered anything new about life or dogs or anything. I mean, every single lesson that I got from, you know, just watching Lucy is something I've always known. Everybody always knows. You should let go of your anger. You know, you should have fun. You know, you should pay attention to people you love. It's just that that Lucy keeps doing those things.
And, yeah.
I'm really bad at it, most of it. So that was kind of the idea.
Well, one thing you did, you do observe that I didn't think of is dogs are incredibly honest and will confess to things immediately where cats won't. And you talk, and to describe the thing, describe the thing in the book about the canary, the bird has a canary in its mouth or something. And
Right. If dog has done something wrong or any other dog near your dog has done something wrong, your dog will feel guilty, terribly guilty. Beyond the floor. I describe a courtroom scene. If the dogs had a justice system, like the defendant would immediately confess whether he was guilty or not. And so would the prosecutor. And so would all the jury and everybody would be guilty in a dog justice system. But yeah, whereas a cat, you could walk in and, you know, the cat could have the bird in its mouth and the cat will deny having any knowledge of what happened. I don't know what life lessons you could get from cats unless you were going to be in the witness.
Oh God! We had my wife had a cat, and you could only pet the cat straight on. Literally, you had to put your hand like on the cat's forehead. If you went a little to either side, she'd swipe at you.
Then you're in trouble.
It's like I can't live my life like this. It's like
too many rules with cats. I try to tell people the difference between dog and cats. Like, if you go to a dog park, there will be dogs running around, playing with each other, happy. There will be dog owners inevitably talking to each other because their pets are all playing with each other. And it's just like this big, happy scene. Now, try to imagine a cat park. You know, there would be people, isolated people standing there, there'd be no cats at all. People would be like, where the hell is my cat? You know, that would be the cat part.
Yeah. The cat ends up being in charge. The cat ends up walking you as opposed to you walking the cat, right?
the cat is in a tree somewhere going, what the hell are they doing?
They're so stupid. We could be in the house watching Judge Judy. What are we doing here? Come on. So you said that it just sort of turned into a self-help book. You didn't intend it to be. It didn't start out that way. But were there things about you, maybe even flaws that got unearthed as you wrote the book that you didn't expect to discover, or you felt you needed to address as you sort of delved into writing the book?
Yeah, I mean, because my feeling was, if I'm going to write about a lesson, I need to make sure that I am at least making some effort to apply that to myself. I mean, if it's one thing to know something is true and to tell everybody this is true, you should do this, but it's another to actually apply it in your own life. And among the more difficult ones is making friends. I'm terrible at it. I was, better at it when I was a kid, but I've never been great at it. Mm-hmm. And, keeping in touch with your friends and, dogs, like most dogs anyway, Lucy for sure. As soon as she sees anybody, any person, any dog, she wants to be friends with that person or dog. Mm-hmm. She just loves everybody. She's very, very quick to try to form a relationship. And I'm not, I'm really bad at that. So I've been trying, I've been writing names down and saying, I'm going to call that person. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because I've been talking to guys in general about this. Women can do that. They can call another woman. My wife does this all the time, just to call and just to talk. They don't have to have a reason. But we have to have men. I know this is a generalization, but I still think it's true. We have to have a reason. We have to have a purpose. What is the purpose of this call? What did we,
right.
And if you call somebody you haven't talked to in 15 years, why is he calling me now?
They probably think that the reason you're calling after 15 years is ostensibly to say hi, but they're waiting for that second part where it's like you want something. It's like, hey, Dave, I haven't seen you, talked to you in 15 years. How you doing? Good. Hey, by the way, I need a kidney. Dave, could I have a kidney? Like, that's the conversation.
But by the way, just curious. No reason. What's your blood type?
Exactly. that's a really good point. And I think you're right. As you mentioned the thing about the dog making friends, you can't walk 5 feet without our dog going up to somebody and give me a pet. Come on, pet me, give me a pet. Say hi to me.
I love you already based entirely on how you smell. I love you.
It's hilarious. Do you think you could have written this book 20 years ago? I mean, is not
absolutely
so much,
not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Why not?
I was, I was too into my career and to being, being Dave Barry, the comedy guy who writes humor, and busy, mm-hmm. busy. Those things, and I'm not saying career is unimportant and all that. I'm just saying that I cannot overestimate the sledgehammer impact of turning 70 and thinking, the next big birthday I'm going to have, if I get there, will be 80, which is really old. So, it really makes you think. I think it should make you think. Maybe it was, I took too long to even think about it. But like, what am I, what am I really liking about myself and what am I not? And, at this point, I don't care much seriously about professional accomplishments. I just don't. Mm. I'm too old to care about it. Half the people I know, most of the people I know at my age are retired, don't do anything anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I shouldn't say that. They do things, but they're not like professional things.
Right.
So I 20 years ago, no, I would have still been, I would have paid lip service to the idea of, you should take more time with your family and friends and you should, but I don't think I would have felt I needed to do those things because mm-hmm. I was busy.
Yeah. I mean, I think it sounds like, and I know the feeling, you're less introspective. You don't have time for it. You think that's a waste of time. You have bigger things to do, more important things to do. And And then when you hit 70 and you're about to die, which you obviously are in your case. No. And by the way, you don't, exactly. You don't look 70, by the way. Your picture on the book, I mean.
Well, thanks, but I still am. Nonetheless, I am.
You have a piece in there under the third lesson. And by the way, for people, when you get to the end of the book, Dave puts it on the line there. He grades himself on the seven lessons, which is really interesting. You should check that out. But under the third lesson, you say, you talk about diversity training. And I had this conversation where I work about intent versus how your words land on somebody. And what I was told was, it really doesn't matter what you intended. It matters how the person felt. And I said, no, there has to be some balance there. Otherwise, you could theoretically sue me, and then I fire me, and I could sue you for inappropriate dismissal. And you talked about going to a diversity class, and you say, from the book, I'm quoting, "Of course we said all the right things in the class because it was mandatory. But inside, we were seething. We were ready to go join the Klan." which leads to the point, it's not just about how the person feels. And if it were, you say all the humor comes out of the world. How did you arrive at that? Did you have, because I think that's so spot on, and a lot of people are saying that.
This is one of the areas where I feel I am really an authority. I started writing humor columns like 40 years ago. And I have received a million letters over the years and emails reacting to my columns. And I have learned that you cannot write anything that you think is funny, anything that will not offend somebody. You just can't. There are people out there who have no sense of humor, who have no idea what humor is. And then there are people nowadays, it's worse than that. There are people out there who are determined to be offended no matter what. You cannot possibly placate them. And you can't just turn your whole intellectual life over to these people, let them become, you know, the judge and jury of what you're allowed to think is funny. So diversity training, I went through it several times because I work for the Miami Herald, which is owned by a large corporation. And when the diversity training thing hit, we all had to go to it. Mm-hmm. And they basically kept saying, you know, that if anybody is offended, it's your fault. And I would in the class say, no, it's not my fault if somebody else is offended. I'm allowed to think what I think. They're allowed to think what they think, but it's not my fault that you're offended, you know.
Yeah.
I'm granting that there are things that are offensive, that, you know, but I think there's just a gigantic gray area where we've got to the point where, but you know, this is not something new that I'm observing here, but we have reached the point where people are terrified. Professional comics are afraid to go on college campuses now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had an incident at a club, we're going to wrap in a minute, but I was talking to a guy and a woman, married couple, and the guy I was just chit chatting before I started to jump into material, and the guy was answering all the questions, and I said, "How long have you been married?" And the woman blurts out 25 years, and the way she blurted it out, it was funny. And I laughed and the crowd laughed, and I go, "Oh, that was funny." And then I started, and then another woman, a younger woman, it tends to be younger people, I find, not, you know, 50s, 60s, it's like they're in that different era where it was, you could more reasonable thought about this stuff. And this woman goes, what, a woman can't speak in public? I go, excuse me? She goes, well, why did you laugh at the woman when the woman answered the question, what, only a man can answer the question? I go, you're joking, right? She goes, and then the crowd starts going, oh, come on. And I just said, because they were all like, you just find this something that didn't exist. She was just trying to create controversy when there was no controversy.
Right.
It was not,
I know. I mean, wondering why this person would go to a comedy club in the first place, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I said to her, you know, look, you're going to do one of two things. You can either go out to the bar, there's a window you can see into the showroom, and then when I'm done, you can come back in, or you can sit there and shut the F up, is what I said to her. And she went, what?
Whoa.
And I said, yeah, I said, because you need to go get a permit at City Hall and have a march for whatever issue it is that's bothering you. I said, but you're not going to do it in my show, and you're not going to try to put me back on my heels under this current environment. And I don't know if the pendulum swings back, but I can totally relate to what you said about your writing, because I think it's beyond people being offended. I think it's become a proactive endeavor for some people to look for controversy and create it when there is none. And I think it's mainly to draw attention to themselves.
Yeah, or to feel like there's some purpose to your life, and the only way you can have purpose anymore is to be persecuted and oppressed. And, you know, get over yourself.
Exactly.
It's an unfortunate tendency. I hope you're right about the pendulum swinging. I know that a lot of people are tired of it. It's just we've been sort of all bullied into silence. I think more people agree with you and me than don't, but it's kind of hard to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, just finishing up, there was one quote that really stood out to me, one piece of the book that stood out to me. You said that that's what Lucy does. She makes the best of things. She's way better at this than I am. I know much more than she does, but she knows something I don't, how to be happy. I really related to that because I think I'm kind of like you. My wife tries to get me to, you know, see the more positive side of things. And has that stuck with you a little bit, that ability maybe that Lucy has to kind of look at life that way a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, very much. There's a last chapter in the book that I had a pretty horrible experience. My family did, involving my daughter, after I finished the book originally. And I ended up writing an additional chapter about that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the point of it, is that, you know, if you really get some perspective on what is important in your life, you realize that you've been wasting a lot of time getting angry and upset over and concerned about things that in the end do not have any meaning in your life, really significant meaning in your life. Right. And I've become mellower, since that and since writing this book and getting old. But I am more inclined now to just let it slide than I used to be. Lots of stuff. And it's better. I'm a somewhat happier person. I'm not Zen yet, but I'm a happier person.
Well, that's good to hear. But I want to have you back on. We have to talk about a lot of other stuff because you and I are a lot alike. I have a big thing about bad customer service, and I lose my temper. And I know. So we got to talk more. But the book is Lessons from Lucy. It's about his adorable Dave Barry's adorable dog, and just really great to have you on, and been a big fan of yours. And come back anytime. Let's talk some more, even if you're not plugging anything, just to kind of commiserate with each other. I think we're cut from the same cloth a little bit in terms of how we look at life. So it'd be great to have you back anytime.
Well, I'd love to. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. That was Dave Barry. Very funny. Check out his book. And you can check me out. I'm going to be on the road. Go to my website, paulmecurio.com. Be all over the country the next couple of months, and hope to see you out there. And thanks for checking out the podcast, and we'll see you next week.